Hello, all. I'm Megan Bell, Director of Engagement at Daylight, and your host. Welcome to Illuminate Philanthropy, where every episode seeks to brighten the path of philanthropic advisory, elevate the profession, and amplify its impact. In this premiere edition, we're embarking on an insightful journey through the evolving landscape of philanthropic advising. Philanthropy isn't static. It's a dynamic field influenced by emerging trends and shifting paradigms. So if you're ready to gain valuable insight and adapt to the changing tides of philanthropy, you're in the right place. Let's dive in and illuminate the path forward together. Our tour is almost over, and we're so grateful for those of you who've stuck around to listen because we are going to get to the eighth trend today. And I'm just thrilled to be a part of this podcast, a part of Daylight, and I'm so excited to have Deanne here to spread Daylight with us. So, Deanne, welcome back.
Thanks, Meg. Good to be here.
I know
here.
We just saw you last week where you talked with us about Trend 7. So we're going to jump right in today. Before we get to the trend, Dan, we all want to know a little bit more about you. What really inspired your philanthropic journey? What brought you here today?
Thanks for the question, Meg. I would have to say that, just like everyone else, I entered the philanthropic space it was a plan, right? It was one of those things that just happened. But if you start asking other philanthropy advisors about their background, something like changed in their life. There was a transition, something happened in their life that made them decide that I want to be in this space. And for me, it was when I was five. I'm Chinese, but I was born in Vietnam. And it was after the Vietnam War, the government had already taken my father's factory, so he couldn't make his living anymore. And because the factory is also attached to our house, right, we also had to move. So it was one of those moments, and my parents, I think they were super brave. We left in the middle of the night in a boat. We were at sea for 7 days, six nights. So we went from Vietnam and we landed at a small island called Bidong Island off the coast of Malaysia, part of the Malaysian countries, Malaysian islands. And so, we actually met up. There was a pirate. There was a pirate boat in the middle of all that. But all we had to do was just give them the gold, right? And then they would leave us alone. So I spent, my family and I spent 9 months in this refugee camp in Bidong Island. And there was a point where we had to decide, because my grandmother was with me as well. My grandmother and my aunts and uncles, the U.S. was only taking a certain amount of people. And then Australia was also taking a certain amount of folks. So our family was split amongst that group. And so my family ended up, the immediate family ended up here in the U.S. I grew up in Michigan, but I distinctly remember being 5 years old, standing on that beach, looking out in the ocean, and there was a gray boat. And that gray boat was a Red Cross. Okay. Everyone knew that boat was where the medicine and the food and that was like the most special place to be in. And I think the Red Cross does amazing branding because even to this day, like, I will always remember that. And when we came to the U.S., it was the Salvation Armies, the Goodwills, the community action agencies. It was them and the schools, right, and the counselors and the teachers that helped us transition to our life here in the U.S. And I will always remember that. I remember we came in around September, and there was first Christmas. We didn't know what really Christmas was, but there were all these gifts underneath the tree for us. And they were not brand new gifts. They were toys and clothes and all that. But the idea, right, that strangers would give you something, that stuck with me. Over the years, I've always volunteered or done work, whether it's college or school or working in two or three jobs, it was always on my mind. I went to law school, and when I graduated, my goal was to, I was in the public defender's office, right, 6 months into it. My grandmother ended up with cancer. I went to the American Cancer Society. And in that moment, with a suit on, they thought I was interviewing for a job. I didn't even know what that job was, but it was the director of planned giving. And they said, would you like to interview for the position right there and then? And the good news is there was only two, it was me and another gentleman that interviewed. And he was so much further in his career that the pay was not proper for him. And so they said, you have the job. But it was one of those moments where my boss said, I was just told I was giving a job description. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I can't help you with this, but you need to go raise client gifts for us. All right. And on my first day into the office, I literally built my own desk. It was a desk in a box. And I think that's really like this, it's my career. It has always been my career. I have built or started positions, right? Or positions were started for me. And everything I think I've been so grateful for the support. And whether it's in the nonprofit or for-profit sector, it's been an amazing journey for me. I would say when I came to the Bay Area, I worked at the Asian Pacific Fund. It was an Asian American Community Foundation during the dot-com days. And I was brought into conversations that no 31-year-old should have been brought in. We had a lot of founders from Asia, Taiwanese, Chinese, right, South Asian, and they were taking their companies public. There was a lot of money on the table during that time, but they also wanted to talk about philanthropy, and there was no other Asian Americans that understood planned giving. And so I was brought into these conversations, and it was amazing for me to help them, like the translate, right, I would say, on the cultural side between wanting to give here in the U.S. and wanting to give back home in the countries that they were born and raised. And so that started my whole journey into the space of doing a lot of work overseas, especially in Asia. And then I was recruited by U.S. Trust and joined the Plan Giving Group. And again, like we were building out the West Coast kind of presence in Plan Gifts. And that's when I met Crystal. Crystal and I were, I think, in L.A. in a hotel room. And we have boxes and boxes. You know, at the time it was all paper of CRTs, charitable trusts, right? We had the documents and we had the tax returns. She went through the tax returns. I went through the trust documents. And that's how we bonded. But it was, we didn't sleep that night. We had to get through the I think it was like 14 or 15 boxes of materials. So that's how far Crystal and I have gone back. But the work itself, it's been really difficult growing up, I would say, being a Chinese, you know, American or Asian American in a very predominantly white community, right? So when people talk about having experienced bias and racism, I've done all that, right? And I think on top of that, being in the wealth management world has always also been an issue, right? Not only are you a woman Asian American, but I'm relatively short. And so it's constantly have to look up to get people. But the journey has been amazing. And I'll give you an example. When I was at U.S. Trust, Ann Barden, one of the best, like greatest mentors I've had, she was in the Northern California Plan Giving Council. Not only did she say, I have to join as a board member, being 31 years old, right? The day I went to that board meeting, they also said, by the way, you're chairing our conference. And she pulled me aside, and she could tell I was like freaking out, right? She pulled me aside. She said, I will help you, but I need you to do this because that way, you know, you will meet a lot of people, right, as you're doing this work, and that will help propel your career. That was one of the most amazing sponsorships I have ever experienced. And so I will always remember that. And that's why I have such a love for the Plan Giving Councils.
But you've worked tirelessly to support many of us in this field. And I speak honestly when I say you're equally a mentor to me. And I think your story really highlights, one, the power of nonprofits. I mean, most people probably know nonprofits are the third largest employer right now, and they're needed and necessary. And Salvation Army and Red Cross came to your aid, and you are here. And so there is impact there that was important to recognize. I think this idea around you and building boxes out of desks or building desks out of boxes are exactly what you have done and replicated over and over again. And it's why Daylight is here today. So I'm just really excited to know you, Dan, and to be a part of your journey and excited to bring everyone along with us, which is why we're here at this podcast today to illuminate and bring daylight to folks about the real importance of philanthropy and one's role in advising around philanthropy. So a sincere thank you, Dan.
No, Meg, it's actually a privilege, right, to right. be able to help others and make it not so hard.
So let's tie this podcast up. So trend eight, what is trend eight?
It's we're calling it the messy marketplace, right? It is not the most academically appropriate trend, but it is our philanthropic philanthropic sector is becoming very messy. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming a marketplace. And I see that, jokingly, but not, is that there is a lot of capital that is coming into the philanthropic sector. And no one's really tracking that, right? No one's like really calling attention to this. It's basically the Wall Street type groups, right, that they're investing in the sector. And they're doing it quietly. It's not a very big publicity around this work. So you've got your private equity groups, venture capital groups, and you have even also the family offices, right, with their patient capital that are infusing money into the sector. And it's very unfortunate that most of the groups that they're supporting are for-profit groups, right? A lot of them are in the tech business. And an example is also like Bain Capital. I think back in July 2023 last year, they infused a lot of funds, capital inside Ren, which is, you know, Ren is a leader in our group, in our sector around donor advised funds. And, you know, and I remember way back then, it was called Renaissance at that time. They were the only ones that were willing to do CRT trustees, you know, ship on its own. So they built a really great reputation in the sector. But with this new infusion of private equity capital, they can grow. Right. And they also acquired Stellar, which is a DAF kind of platform as well. So again, donor advised fund industry, big growth in that area, lots of investments, lots of new ones also being created, right? A lot of mobile apps and all that. I think the other one that's interesting is Tiffin acquired a Giving Place. Giving Place was created by Paul Lusso, a good friend. But Tiffin is really interested in figuring out how to address that friction in wealth management with AI. But they also they serve a lot of family offices and they put a lot of money to help and support Arabella. That's how they grew. And as Arabella's grown, they actually bought an accounting firm, right? So it's a messy marketplace because now you have a lot of Wall Street players, for-profit capital coming into our sector. And it's really interesting because it's not just, you know, one area they're looking in. They're looking at all the different areas. And I think one of the reasons why they're interested in the space is besides the do good piece, I got to believe there's a heart piece to this, is a lot of the philanthropic advising sector, one, it has a lot of money that's kind of being shifted. Remember with the Great Wealth Transfer, about 11.9 trillion is moving through the charities, but it's steady income, right? It's steady returns. And so I think that's why they're really interested in the space and it diversifies their portfolio. But a lot of the investments are made in products, I would say firms that are just streamlining and organizing kind of decision-making, right? For whether you have a donor advised fund or a private foundation, it's helping philanthropists manage, right, a lot of the philanthropic giving in these tools.
I mean, and I've experienced that myself in the work that I've been doing in field building. It's sort of, I feel like everyone sort of has the same intent and interest and mission and desire, but there's a lot to choose from, which is creating competition. And then you also use that word friction. And I just feel like there shouldn't be friction when all we want to do is give, but you know, there is. So is it just, there's so much to choose from. The marketplace has gotten so expansive that me as an advisor, as somebody in a nonprofit space, just doesn't know what's available to them?
I think just not exposed is probably the best way. And it's growing so quickly. So unless you're on top of this and tracking this, there's no way you can keep up with this, right? Because there has been, I would say after COVID, there has been massive growth in this space, especially the firms that are building tools, right? Yeah. Trying to figure out how do we the same question that Daylight is trying to answer. Let's figure out how to move the philanthropic capital to communities. And what's interesting is, as well, is none of, you know, remember, philanthropic advising firms are really difficult to scale. They're usually solo or one or two folks, right, who are in the firm. And it's the nuances and the experience and the education that a philanthropy advisor has, and the relationships that you hold with the clients, is hard to replicate and grow. It's hard to scale. So that's why we don't have a whole lot of philanthropic advising firms that are like the Arabellas, the RPAs of the world, right? Mm-hmm. Very difficult to scale. And so that is the key. I think that's interesting, is we have to build scalable models, but the business models is going to change. And I also think the compensation models will change as well, especially this infusion of new technology and new capital in the space. I think that's the exciting part, is the creativity, right? How we finance, how we're going to grow the firms, how we grow organizations, whether you're for-profit or nonprofit. I think it's almost cutting edge in that it just really depends on how creative you can be, right? Now you could dip into the for-profit side. You can figure out how to get a grant to grow your organization or firm. I think there's all the different levers that you could play with. And you could be so creative in how you structure as well. Is it a loan? Is it a replicable loan from a donor advice fund? Is it an impact investment? Is it MRI? Lots of different tools to choose from.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm correct, we at Daylight are actually trying to put together a sort of a landscape, right? I mean, we ourselves are trying to understand all the players in this space as well.
Yes, and not just understand the players in the space, but we need to understand the different business models that they're working under, right? So so if we understand the business models and then kind of figure out where on the landscape they fall, then either we can replicate or we can find what's missing.
Complement, add to, exactly. Right. Yeah.
And if this continues, if the families are really interested in not only giving, but really building and talking about social impact, right? Mm-hmm. What better way than to figure out how to build the sector? Right, mm-hmm. The foundations of a sector this way. And so not only could it be an investment, right, it could be a grant, working through the whole spectrum, but why not if you could do good and get some return as well in the process? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think this idea of investing in the philanthropic advising space is so interesting for other families. And also, how do we also get my peers, right, involved, and how can I get them to also give?
Well, and that whole investment in philanthropic advising space is really why Daylight exists as well, to help build that practice and that profession and put some definition and formation around it. Because as you shared with us in the last episode, really philanthropic advising has been around, but there really hasn't been a formal pathway or definition or even agreeable compensation. And so really Daylight's come together as a global platform to really help define and elevate the profession. Is that fair to say?
Yes. When I came into this space, I remember one of the gentlemen I spoke to, he said, "You will never make money in this space." And I didn't believe him. Like, part of me is just thinking, why could I not make money in this space, right? I have knowledge, I have expertise. They're missing something. The bankers are talking to their clients, but nothing is happening. But when philanthropy advisors like me get involved, money starts shifting into the communities. So why can't I make like money in the space, being the expert, elevating kind of philanthropy advisors in the same space as accountants, financial advisors, CPAs, right, and get paid on this. And now, you know, 15, 16 years later, I think we're at the right moment to see this happen because of all the kind of great wealth transfer, the demographic changes. And now with this, you know, I would say the messy marketplace kind of for-profit capital coming in, there's a really amazing opportunity here. If we have all this infusion and capital that's coming together and this demand for philanthropic advising, the issue now we have is we don't have enough philanthropy advisors. Right. We don't have enough properly trained philanthropy advisors in this space. And if I am a CFO sitting inside a family office and I'm trying to figure out how do I evaluate which philanthropy advisor I should bring in for my client family, how do I figure that out? What do I compare? Is it the education background? Right? There's no Yelp, right, for philanthropy advisors. So what do I do? So what we want to make sure is that people are properly trained, right? And we so we built IPA, the Impact Philanthropy Advisor, to start not certifying them, right? Certifying them saying they have the basic requirements. They met the educational requirements to be a philanthropy advisor. In addition, the ethical requirements as well. And we put on top of that, the continuing education, right? Right. So now we're building towards a true profession. Will IPA be the standard out there? I don't know. My hope is it will be, but even if it's not, I think us just putting IPA out in the marketplace means you got to do better than us, right? So that is, we want to build this new standard of impact.
And really a modernized, scalable approach that actually is also very holistic and more diversified ideally than before.
Yes. And we are also very sensitive to the price points, right? So yes, it would be great if the for-profit sector is willing to pay the fee that the IPA requires, but we are also very sensitive to, we also have to price it where the nonprofits, right, or the solo entrepreneurs can also have access to the IPA program. And IPA is just one of many, many other projects that we are working on.
Right.
By December, we'll have a slew of continuing education credits. And then by 2025, we're building out new certificates. I think what I'm most excited about is building a certificate on behavioral philanthropy, and advising. And then another one is we need a certificate on impact investing for advisors and for the philanthropy advisors.
So we need everyone to stay tuned as Daylight continues to evolve and spread light around philanthropic advising in the sector. So, Dan, it's such a pleasure to sit with you today. I think we need to remind our listeners one more time about what Trend 8 was. So can you summarize Trend 8 for us one last time?
So Trend 8 is the messy marketplace.
Messy marketplace. But we at Daylight are going to help you navigate that marketplace. So stay with us.
It's a beautiful, messy marketplace.
It's a beautiful, messy marketplace, and it has heart. So we are going to continue along the journey. Join us on our journey at Daylight. Again, please, if you want to learn more about Impact Philanthropy Advisor, learn and take a look at our research, please go to daylightadvisors.com. You can reach out to Deanne at any point or myself, Megan Bell. But we really want to encourage everyone to join us along in this journey, be part of our community so that we can learn and grow together towards more impact than ever before. So thank you all for joining us. This concludes our first series of a podcast on the 8 trends of philanthropic advising and how to adapt. So we appreciate all of you who stayed along for all 8 trends and stay tuned for more from Daylight. And thank you.